Hello and welcome to the December 8th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you from downtown in Alaska's capital city, the KTOO studios. We've got a great show. We're going to learn about weather with meteorologist Rick Fritch. We're going to talk to local resources right here, Bill Legere and Tim Olson, to talk about KTOO's increased news presence, and then we'll end with Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes in for Antonio Gonzalez. Medics at the Ocheti Shekoing camp in North Dakota are doing tent-to-tent medical sweeps. The area is experiencing single-digit temperatures, with wind chill readings dropping to 20 degrees below zero and colder, which is adding to dangerous outdoor conditions. Linda Black Elk with the Standing Rock Medic and Healer Council says one person ended up in the hospital this week with moderate hypothermia.
So we did have some issues, but luckily no one was severely injured. We didn't have, you know, anybody freeze. We're really lucky. I would say that our medical team is actually as prepared as any local hospital or clinic.
Black Elk says what's posing a greater risk to campers is the law enforcement roadblock on Highway 1806, which is preventing or delaying emergency services. Standing Rock Chairman Dave Archambault continues to call on those remaining to leave, saying the recent winter storm is just a glimpse of even harsher weather to come. He says for now there's no reason to stay since pipeline construction is stopped. His request is getting a mixed response. Antonio Gonzalez caught up with some travelers in Bismarck, North Dakota.
The wind blows snow around as snowpack icy road conditions are found throughout the city. At the airport Wednesday, travelers included people coming from and going to the Ocheti Shekoing camp. Derek Hinke from the Fort McDermitt Paiute Shoshone tribe was at the camp for about a week.
Being in camp, people were checking up on each other. They were coming together, and you know, like nobody needed anything from you or wanted anything from you. It was just like everybody was pulling as a team, and it was compassion, it was love, you know, it was beautiful.
He was traveling back to Nevada and says Chairman Dave Archambault's request should be honored.
I don't know what they're dealing with here. They're also going to be held responsible, which isn't fair to the Standing Rock tribe, for people that are coming in that aren't prepared for the weather, that aren't prepared for the situation. I highly respect, you know, like almost in a way saying, hey, look, this might be a safety issue. Like, I seen a guy out there freaking flip-flops, you know, so he's doing what's best for not only the Standing Rock tribe, but for everybody in camp. As a guest, I'm going to go home.
Denver Odell Fusen, Sault Ste. Marie Chippewa, arrived to the airport for his second trip back to camp. He says he was returning because the battle against the Dakota Access Pipeline is not over yet.
We have to kill that black snake.
Fusen says he believes social media posting from activists, which say Energy Transfer Partners has continued construction and is drilling. He's ready to stay through the winter.
Believe me, I got plenty of gear now, and I plan on staying for the whole haul. Inside me is telling me to stay and finish this out.
Chairman Archambault says the energy company is not drilling. Forecasters predict temperatures will drop below zero by next week. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In his annual budget address Wednesday, North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple drew a standing ovation when he recognized Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirschmeyer and other law enforcement officers fighting the pipeline protests.
Many of our people have gone months without a day off, ably managing the onslaught of out-of-state agitators in a situation that could never have been anticipated. We have had no choice but to step up and cover the expenses of maintaining public safety throughout the ordeal.
Dalrymple says state costs for the law enforcement action reached $17 million, which will be covered with reserved funds. Former Chukchansi tribal police officers are suing Madera County officials in California over their arrests stemming from an October raid of the tribe's casino. The Fresno Bee reports nine officers filed civil suits claiming false arrest, malicious harassment, and arrests without probable cause. They seek damages for lost wages, emotional distress, and excessive bail. The officers were originally charged with felonies for alleged kidnapping and false imprisonment. Many of them accepted plea deals for misdemeanor trespassing and other reduced charges. The raid also resulted in closure of the Chukchansi Gold Resort and Casino for more than a year. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Chickasaw Press, presenting Mission to Space, Chickasaw astronaut John Harrington's story of making his youthful dreams of going to space a reality. Holiday delivery of this children's book available on orders placed at ChickasawPress.com by December 21st. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 6th annual Striking Eagle Basketball Tournament and Education Fair beginning December 28th. Information on the event and services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to KTOO's very own Juneau Afternoon, coming at you live from the KTOO studios in downtown Juneau. Jeff Brown is at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show, and I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. And our first guest, we usually kick off Thursdays with our UAS corner, and we have some people I haven't met yet in the studio, which is really exciting. We have Joe Nelson and we have Danielle Carlson, both here to talk about what's happening at UAS. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joan.
So, Joe, what's your position at UAS?
I'm Vice Chancellor of Enrollment Management, which means I oversee all of the student services.
Okay. And before we start asking Danielle, who's your newest admissions counselor, some questions, I want to talk about the, what do we call it? What is the proper name of it?
Strategic Pathways.
The Strategic Pathways. But before we get to that, about the
Come Home to Alaska.
Exactly. That's the proper name for it. How does that work?
Right now, in this the Come Home to Alaska program, it's targeting all of those young folks, or they don't need to be young, but the family that basically does not live in Alaska. And it's an effort to avoid or to find that exemption for the non-resident surcharge to make it more affordable. And we know we've got somewhat of a brain drain, and we all have family in lower 48, and this is just an incentive to bring back some of that horsepower, go to our universities here. It applies to all the universities, all the UA system. They just need to fill out that non-resident surcharge exemption form. And on this, in this particular program, what they'll do is list the parent, grandparent, or the family member that they're making that connection to who is still in Alaska. So the idea is they got family here, so why should they pay the non-resident surcharge?
So they'll get in-state rates.
Yes.
That sounds great, and that's a big difference.
It's many thousands of dollars difference.
That sounds great. Okay, so thanks for doing that. Danielle Carlson's in the studio with us. She is a recent graduate of UAS. She's from Sandpoint, and she now works for UAS, as I understand it, as the admissions counselor, and most of her responsibilities are recruiting candidates from rural Alaska. Is that true?
Yeah, the places that I usually go is in rural Alaska, but I also have taken trips down to the lower 48 and some of the bigger towns in Alaska, but typically I travel out to rural Alaska.
And when we talk about recruiting people to come to UAS, what does that look like? What do you do? What does your job entail?
So depending on the type of event, when I'm just doing typical like recruiting trips, I just go into high schools, give like a brief presentation, tell students about my own experiences attending UAS, especially because I'm from rural Alaska, I can make that connection with other students in rural Alaska, let them know that if there's no one rooting for them, that I'm kind of there as like the living proof. You can get out of the village and you can go to school. And I just give them a presentation. Sometimes they have questions about college in general, but specifically to UAS. I can help with scholarship applications, FAFSA information,
kind of navigate that whole labyrinth of paperwork.
Yeah. So it's a variety of different things depending on where I'm going.
Okay. And what was your experience at UAS? So you come. How big is Sandpoint? How many people live in Sandpoint?
So there's about 900 people who live there, but the locals that live there. So it's a fishing community. So we have a lot of cannery workers that are there throughout the year. So in the summer, it'll be about 1,000 residents, but locals probably about 600. And coming to UAS wasn't a huge transition because at least the community itself at UAS is very small and close-knit. Juneau, to me, I know a lot of people will say it's a small town, but this is a pretty big city compared to where I'm from. And a lot of students from rural Alaska do view Juneau as a city, but the nice thing is that UAS is kind of like its own little community, and everyone that I've met has been super supportive, and I really enjoyed my experience at UAS. I'm really thankful that I get to work for the university now.
It sounds great. What did you study?
So I actually don't graduate until May with my bachelor's of liberal arts degree. It's an interdisciplinary studies, so my primary emphasis is social sciences. I do sociology and psychology, and then my secondary is communications. So,
oh, wow, that sounds great.
Kind of all over
and
the world.
So what is the strategic pathways? Is it an initiative or is it a program?
It's a process, basically a big restructuring process for the whole university system, looking forward in the future and trying to figure out how we can reshape and do things better and improve on it. Our overall programs, it's looking for alignments, efficiencies. So it's a very aggressive initiative driven from the president and the board and chancellors and on down, and it's really taking almost every aspect of the university and bringing the three universities together and trying to find ways to find efficiencies and realign where it makes sense.
So a strategic plan and a very aggressive strategic plan.
Yeah. And we're not even halfway through it yet, but UAS is already feeling the impact of the initial phases. And one of them there's an effort, and community members should be hearing about it now. It's the School of Education. There's a recommendation to consolidate our three education programs into one led by the University of Fairbanks. That's the recommendation that the president's making, that Fairbanks should be an administrative unit. Those of us, especially affiliated with Southeast and the long history here of our School of Education, are drawing a line and saying, no, you know, let's not so fast here. We've got a very productive School of Education. And one of our strengths, it's recruiting and it's training native teachers. One of the problem statements out there is the turnover in rural Alaska for teachers. The idea is native teachers, you won't have to worry about the transitions and the lifestyle. They know what they're getting into, so there won't be as much of a turnover problem. Well, UAS, we've produced a lot of Alaska native teachers in the last 10 years, and more so than Anchorage or Fairbanks. So we're doing a lot of great things, and we are just wrestling with the idea that our College of Education leadership all of a sudden gets migrated up to Fairbanks.
So if our listeners are agree with you, which I know for a fact of so many people I know in Juneau that have gone through that program and have become teachers, and it's a wonderful program, how can people get involved? Like, is there a way is there a way for people to weigh in?
Yeah, it's moving fast. So in the next few days here, the Board of Regents, they're going to meet 9 a.m. on Wednesday, December 14th. Should be a public meeting to see online. It's going to be a teleconference meeting. But contacting the Board of Regents directly and the president is the main method, because they are going to entertain this. The motion was tabled at the last meeting. They're going to make another decision and actually should be voting on it this time. And the email is the best way generally, but it's ua-bor@alaska.edu. And then the president has his email. But to the extent that folks have connections with others, it's that message needs to get back to the individual board members who will all be voting on it next Wednesday.
Okay. If you're just joining us, that's Joel Nelson who's talking. He's from UAS. And if you have any questions about anything we've been talking about, because we've gone from Danielle Carlson's recruiting and her current path at UAS and Joel Nelson and the program about bringing people from the lower 48 family members up. So if you have any questions, where can they reach you, Joe? What's the easiest way?
The easiest is the main line that actually is the main line for admissions and other questions. It's the 796-61000 or 6100.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you both for coming in today. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 8th of December, 2016. It's the birthday of the artist Diego Rivera, born in Mexico in the town of Guanajuato, 1886. He traveled to Italy, studied Renaissance frescoes, murals painted on plaster, and brought that technique back to life in the 20th century. Frescoes which could be displayed right in the middle of people's daily lives rather than behind the doors of a museum. It's the birthday of the novelist Mary Gordon, born Far Rockaway, New York, 1949. She was working on a Ph.D. on Virginia Woolf when she felt inspired by Virginia Woolf to quit her dissertation and write fiction herself, author of The Company of Women, and most recently The Liar's Wife. It's the birthday of Bill Bryson, Des Moines, Iowa, 1951, most recent book, The Road to Little Dribbling, Adventures of an American in Britain. Bill Bryson, travel writer, who recently said, "Nearly every summer when we go away on vacation, I pack an old copy of Anna Karenina, and every year I manage to move the bookmark about 20 pages along before it's time to go home. I've long since lost track of who most of the characters are or what their relationships are with one another. I don't pretend that any of them have ever interested me. At the rate I am going, I estimate that I will need approximately 74 more vacations to finish the book." It's the birthday of the poet who gave us the line, "Carpe diem, quam minimum, credula postero," seize the day, believing as little as possible in tomorrow, the poet Horace, Quintus Horatius Flaccus, born in Apulia, Italy, in 65 B.C. And it's the birthday of James Thurber, 1894, Columbus, Ohio, author best known for his story, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which he based on his own father, a clerk who had dreams of being a lawyer or an actor. Thurber had been in Paris, writing for the Chicago Tribune, went to New York City, met E.B. White at a party. White recommended him to Harold Ross, editor for The New Yorker, and Ross gave him a job on the spot as managing editor. Thurber wrote for the magazine for 40-some years. And in his late years, in his blindness, he would spend up to 3 hours in the morning writing in his head, turning the words over and over until he thought he was ready. Then he'd call his secretary and dictate the story to her. Here's a poem for today by Ron Padgett entitled Glow. When I wake up earlier than you, and you are turned to face me, face on the pillow and hair spread around, I take a chance and stare at you, amazed in love and afraid that you might open your eyes and have the daylights scared out of you. But maybe with the daylights gone, you'd see how much my chest and head implode for you, their voices trapped inside like unborn children, fearing they will never see the light of day. The opening in the wall now dimly glows, its rainy blue and gray. I tie my shoes and go downstairs to put the coffee on. A poem by Ron Padgett, Glow, from his collected poems published by Coffee House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry, more at poetryfoundation.org, and by wordpress.com, where millions go to share their passions on personal and professional blogs, now offering custom .blog domain names, wordpress.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Downtown Business Association, presenting Girlfriends and Gifts, an after-hours shopping event downtown with 17 participating stores. Thursday, December 8th from 4 to 8 p.m. More information at downtownjuno.org.
Hello and welcome back to the December 8th edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. Hey, we've got a special message from CBJ here. They'd like to remind citizens that the Public Works Water Utility no longer has the ability to thaw frozen water pipes. They recommend taking the following preventable measures. Leave a pencil-thin trickle of water running in the sink to keep water circulating. Ensure Crawl space, vents are closed, ensure pipes are properly insulated, and ensure heat tapes are plugged in and are functional, because it is cold out there. Lows today, 5 in the valley, 20 downtown, 20 in Douglas, and 13 at the airport. Right now it's partly cloudy, lows around 20. We're looking at northeast winds to 40 miles per hour with gusts to around 55 miles per hour. And tonight mostly clear, highs around 20, areas of blowing snow. And we've got a high wind warning issued today at 2:41 that's supposed to go until tomorrow, actually Saturday, until 12 p.m. But, you know, if the weather confuses you, we happen to have a subject matter expert here in the studio, Rick Fritsch from the National. What is the exact title of NOAA?
National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration.
Okay, so he's here to talk to us about weather. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Hi, Joan. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah. So I have so many questions. I've been reading the weather of the teleprompter here for, like, I don't know, years, and I'm still stymied by some things. I know it's snowing right now, but this is the question I've been dying to ask. What's the difference between rain and showers?
Oh, they're a very good question, and it does perplex a lot of people. It has to do with the stability of the atmosphere. And what I mean by that is, on those days when we're forecasting rain and you see these sheets of gray clouds that just go across the entire horizon, that's what's called a stratiform or a stratified atmosphere. And a convective atmosphere is what's in place, or what occurs when we talk about showers, whether they be snow showers or rain showers. And all that really means is that in a shower environment, the intensity of the precipitation, again, either rain or snow, the intensity can change dramatically over a short period of time. And you can look out in any one particular direction and see sunshine and blue sky, and yet right over above you, it's either rain or snowing. That's a classic example of what showers look like. Stratiform, or the rain, or just flat out snow, either very high, very light or moderate precipitation that just goes on for hours and hours and hours.
Uh-huh.
Juno, right?
Yes. Okay. But that does explain
when
we go into different pockets. So that's more of a shower type of thing. And also there's also little microsystems here.
Oh, and Juno is famous for its microclimates. As a matter of fact, all of Southeast is famous for microclimates, which is why you can have a forecast for an overnight low of only 5 degrees in the valley, and yet downtown here, maybe the low is only going to get down to 20 degrees. And we've seen, and we do see this every winter, you'll see temperature variations greater than that in the 10 miles between here and the valley.
And then what about, like, out the road? So now we've gone from town to valley and valley and back, but what about out the road? Because that's a whole different microclimate too, isn't it?
It is indeed. And in the wintertime, like what we're in right now, typically out the road we'll see more snow. And in the summertime, the out the road will experience a greater number of sunny days and typically warmer weather than, say, in the valley.
Interesting.
And in variability, Douglas Island, the Mendenhall Peninsula, downtown, past down here, the downtown here towards Thane, all of these areas are different climates.
What is the Mendenhall Peninsula?
That is, as I understand, the Fritz Cove Road, mm-hmm. and Engineers Cut Off, and that piece of land that basically makes a border between the exit of Mendenhall River and Auk Bay. So that little chunk of land there that we fly over on the westbound arrivals to the airport.
As soon as you said those two roads, I was like, of course, that's the Mendenhall Peninsula. It makes perfect sense. Okay, so I have more questions about weather, but how does one become a meteorologist? And what does a meteorologist do? Like, how do you guys and gals know the weather?
Well, to begin with, the pathway to become a meteorologist is very math intensive. And this is where I'd like to let the younger people in the audience realize that math doesn't necessarily have to be intimidating. If you can ride a bicycle and not jump the curb or stop at a stop sign where you want to, you can already do calculus. You just don't know you're doing calculus. The thing that intimidates people about math is learning the language of calculus using all of the mathematical symbols and whatnot. It's just like learning another foreign language.
Wow, that's a great explanation.
So that's that.
So what was your path?
My pathway is very interesting. I started out as a marine biologist as an undergraduate,
and not nearly as much math involved in that pathway. Halfway through my career in my Navy years, I went out to Monterey to get a graduate degree courtesy of the Navy, and it was for something called Air Ocean Sciences. In my particular focus in Air Ocean Sciences was actually physical oceanography and acoustics and under ice noise. So being up here in this part of the world is a natural outfall of that. But tertiary to all that was the meteorology that came along with the Air Ocean Sciences degree. And you get the degree in Air Ocean Sciences, you're a physical oceanographer, and you also happen to be a meteorologist. And in the Navy, both of those fields were used. And I finished my time in the Navy, and now I've got to decide what am I going to do in my post-Navy life. And it turns out that I got hired for the office here in Juneau, very, very fortunate and very happy about that. But doing something that in no way that I expect I would be doing when I was out on Zodiacs in the North Atlantic, brushing sample plates against the backs of whales.
Wow. If you're just joining us, Rick Pritch is here. He's a local meteorologist with NOAA. How many meteorologists are there at NOAA?
Oh, very good question. We're down quite low right now. And pulling this number off the top of my head, I'm thinking right now we have 8 on staff.
Okay. And then how do you do what you do?
Oh, it's
the very user-friendly version, please.
There are three major components to being a meteorologist or a successful meteorologist, specifically here in Juneau. You need observations. And by that, what I mean by that is that you've got these sensors set up at various different airports. Some places have manned stations like our own airport here and Sitka and Ketchikan on a part-time basis. Some of them are automated to the point where there's no human interaction whatsoever. But they provide you hourly information on the state of the atmosphere at the surface at the airport. Observations.
Mm-hmm.
Those observations collected worldwide go into a supercomputer or several supercomputers back in Silver Springs, Maryland. And the supercomputers, using a lot of this math that I was talking about, are taking that observational information to assemble mathematically the state of the atmosphere at that time. And then using more thermodynamics and fluid dynamics, those computers will calculate what the future of the atmosphere should be at various different levels from the surface all the way up to 40, 50,000 feet. That is, in a way, packaged, and we receive that back here at the office. Now, the weak link to all of that is the observations. If you don't have a lot of observations, the supercomputer, no matter how fast it is or how sophisticated it is, can't grasp the true state of the atmosphere right now. We live in Alaska, not a lot of observations. We live on the west coast of a continent. There's not a lot of observations upwind of us, which is, of course, the ocean. So the output of the model has trouble sometimes figuring out what the state of the atmosphere is right now, let alone what it's going to be in the future. That's the third component to being able to forecast in a place like this, and that would be the experience. The highest resolution numeric weather model that we have is about 3 kilometers on a side, so 3 by 3. And with that kind of resolution, you can't not resolve something as small as even Lynn Canal, the width of Lynn Canal. And because of that, these very sophisticated, very powerful, and very accurate down south numeric models have a hard time forecasting what's going on in, say, Lynn Canal. The third component is the experience. The model might be showing you west or east winds over Lynn Canal, 5 to 15 knots of wind. But we know from the experience that when there's a 10 millibar difference in pressure between Skagway and Juneau, it's more likely we're going to have a north wind, 50 knots, storm force wind. Huge difference when it comes to the Mariners, or 15 knots and 3 feet versus 50 knots and 10 feet. Big difference. And those are the microclimates. And everything in southeast, the weather is topographically driven at a scale that the numeric models just cannot resolve.
So you heard it here. Supercomputers, we're Alaskans. We people.
That's right.
That's great. All right, well, we're going to have to wrap up. Rick, thanks so much for coming. But before you go, I have to ask what's on everyone's mind. What's the winter looking like? Where's your money? What do you think?
It's unfortunately, it's not a slam dunk in any regard. The current forecast by the Climate Prediction Center is for something what's called an equal chance forecast. And what that means is there's not enough of a climate signal from the various different things that go into long-term climate. There's not enough of a climate signal to determine whether or not it's going to be, chances are it's going to be colder than normal or warmer than normal. And we don't even have a clear climate signal on how much precipitation above normal, below normal we're going to get. And a lot of this has to do with a very weak La Nina that's going on and the remnants of the blob, which is one manifestation of this thing called a Pacific Decadal Oscillation, and that is diminishing as well. So all of the strong signals that go into a very clear, yes, it's going to be warmer than normal or it's going to be colder than normal, all those strong signals are going away. Another way of saying that we have just as good a chance of having a colder than normal winter as a warmer than normal, just as good of a chance of having a higher than normal precipitation or lower than normal, and here's the big one, just as good of a chance of having better snow than average or less snow than average. Of course, it'd be really kind of hard to beat how poor the snow season was last year.
Okay. Do you have a personal opinion you'd like to venture?
Oh, you know, my kids ask me that question, and friends who want to go out and lay their money down for a seasonal ticket at the lift ticket at Eagle Crest will often call up. And from what I see so far, I think we're going to be on track for a more of a normal seasonal snowfall, and seasonal being from October all the way through March, even though the true winter is December, January, February. And oh, by the way, normal is based on the airport, and normal seasonal snow at the airport is around 86 inches of snow a year.
Okay.
And we're on, I won't say we're on track, but this last storm that we had these last 2 days sure helped out a lot.
Okay. Well, you heard it here. Maybe yes. Maybe no.
Maybe no.
So get out there this weekend, that's
yes.
For sure. All right, thanks so much for coming in. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk to Billiger and Tim Olson about KTOO's very own news presence. Okay, stay tuned.
To laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love, and it's a sunny day. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. We take a walk. The sun is shining down, burns my feet as they touch the ground. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Then we lie.
It is 33 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. I am your Thursday host, Joan Pardis, and I have Bill Legere and Tim Olson, newsman of newsmen, in the studio to talk about what's going on with KTOO's increased news presence. So, hi, guys. Thanks for walking down the hall from
hi.
The studio.
Hi, John. Yep.
So
thanks for having us.
Talk about KTOO's news staff. How many people do you have?
Well, it's increased recently as part of our initiative to really bring great information to the people of Juneau. Well, a few years ago, you know, there were three general assignment reporters working in the newsroom all the time, and it's up more like over a dozen now if you include all the different things that we're working on. And we have branched out and have included a couple of beats and are really kind of working toward bringing the best every day that we can, including recently adding weekend reporters and some other things that people may have noticed.
Now, Joan, this is really all being driven by everything that's happening in journalism around us. The decline of print newspapers, for example, the big changes in commercial media on the national and the state and local level. So we're stepping up to, I think, provide that to fill the gap of being that hyper-local place where you can go to find news and information about your own community, your own state, the issues that have impact and that are important. And it starts here at our board of directors has made this big commitment to shift a lot of what we do, a lot of our resources into news and information.
Okay, that sounds great. So as a user, okay, mm-hmm. what I know that KTOO has a really vibrant web presence. It's got good social media tools. So, and I, of course, I love listening and reading the news, both what you were talking about internationally, nationally, local, and state. So 12 different news staff, okay? Mm-hmm. And they, you said, talked about new initiatives and new beats. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Well, first, I can define sort of what we have going here, because some of the new things we've been working on have added a few folks. We have Jeremy Shea, the news director, Matt Miller, who people hear every morning during Morning Edition. Quentin Chandler has joined us from KBBI in the last year as our education reporter. He covers UAS and the local school district. Andrew Kitchenman is someone who's been with us for a year now. Andrew joined us to be the state house reporter. We share him with the Alaska Public Radio Network, and not really a new initiative, but this was Andrew being here full time with focusing on Juneau was something that we'd been working on for a long time. The Alaska Public Radio Network had reporters here full time in the past at some point, and more recently there was a reporter that was here during the session and when important things were going on. But we think that there are always important things going on in Juneau, and so we are collaborating with the Alaska Public Radio Network to have Andrew here year-round and housed in our newsroom, and he's a KTOO employee. You mentioned the website and social media presence that KTOO has. Some years ago we got our first website, and people would add things to that every once in a while, and now is, you know, the public that uses and devours the news that we create have turned more towards getting their news that way. You know, we've brought people in. We now have a couple of people that spend a great deal of time not only reporting but working on the web and social media presence. We have another reporter joining us soon. It's someone who reported in Alaska for a long time, Jacob Resnick, who has been working in Europe but is coming back to Alaska and will be stationing himself in the KTOO newsroom as the local government reporter here in Juneau starting in January. And so that gives you an example of sort of the local newsroom side. And then we were talking about new initiatives that you brought up, Alaska's Energy Desk and some other things that we're working on that have been things that we've been developing for a while as well, and there are additional people working on that.
Yeah, one thing I think all of this points out is that a few years ago, the main way we presented news was just here on the radio. And so if you wanted to hear a newscast, you had to listen at 6:19 in the morning, and that was about your only option. If you missed it, you missed it. And now everyone wants news on demand and wherever and however you want it. So some of us get our news from social media. Some of us get our news from listening online or reading stories on the website. So even this program at Juneau Afternoon is now probably has as big an audience online, and it will soon be available as a podcast, so you can subscribe to it and just have it automatically download to your media device. And so that's really kind of changed, you know, so now the listener and the reader and the viewer are in charge, not us, in terms of when people listen, read, and view our content. So we're trying to meet people where they are on all of these different platforms. And the latest is to mention Alaska's Energy Desk, which is a new initiative to really do some significant high-impact reporting on energy issues in Alaska. And that's not just oil and gas, but it's the economy, it's climate change, it's the high cost of energy in rural Alaska, It's our relationship with the federal government, our politics and the state legislature. So we've got a team of 9 journalists, editors, reporters, and producers here in an Anchorage and in Unalaska, all working together to put a real focus on energy here, and well timed right now with the big upheaval in our dependence on oil for revenue.
Absolutely. So I can't have the two of you in this studio without asking this question. Where do you see the role of KTOO in, let's say, 6 months and a year? And what kind of changes do you think on the horizon? We talked about major seismic shifts on delivery methods. Of just, you know, what is the state of news in our current climate?
Well, it's easy for us. I mean, I think our future is just being true to the roots of being local. Because, we're live. There are local people here on the air, I mean, right now. You're not going to get that from the online services. You're not going to get that from cable news. You're not going to get that from, the big national companies that control most of the commercial radio stations in the United States. But you're going to get that in every community from your local public station. So our future is being hyper-local. It's being responsive to things that the community needs and wants and expects from us. And, Jeff Brown is probably smiling on the other side of the console here because that's where we started back in the day when Jeff and I were just starting here at KTOO. It was all about localism and about the local community. And here we are saying that's the most important thing that we do. The future of journalism is a bigger question, and it's really at a crossroads in my mind in terms of public trust and confidence. The whole enterprise wasn't helped at all during the last election cycle. There's bipartisan distrust of the media now.
There's citizen journalists.
And fake news, all of these, we're swimming in all of these issues now. And how do we, as a democracy get that back in line and recover from that?
What do you think?
Well, I think you ask a really important question. I think there are a lot of unknowns, and Bill says it well, and that KTOO, this organization, has served Juneau very well and for years and will continue to do so. And we've expanded the way we do things by making forging relationships with other people, like our relationship with the Alaska Public Radio Network, with the Energy Desk. We have a collaboration with a bunch of stations there. We work with NPR and all of the other program providers, and we always are willing to work with people who have the same sort of like-minded, strong journalism ethics that we do and approach to things, and that's how we continue to sort of do more all the time, is to forge relationships and work with like-minded people. And I think that that's going to be the future for us. But there are a lot of questions out there. We always just every day persevere to do the best newscast we can and deliver the best news we can, as quickly as we can and make it right. But you get it to folks when they need it and where they need it. And we're going to continue to do that. And we're going to continue to look for opportunities to, be a part of the community and continue to facilitate information in the community and try to participate as good community citizens.
And the good news, I think, is that there's a generation of terrifically talented and creative storytellers coming along, and many of them have chosen to work here and really comfortable and conversant on all of the media platforms. So right now being a reporter here means, it used to be a tape recorder and a microphone, but now it's a still camera and a video camera and the ability to write for the web and to write for radio and to deliver and to appear on TV and video from time to time requires a lot more. And fortunately, there's a great group of people moving into these roles who just inherently know how to do this, and they're terrific and creative.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're just joining us, Bill Legere and Tim Olson, KTOO stewards, I would say, are here talking about the news and KTOO. And I want to say that we were talking, I asked the question of where do you see KTOO, and you're saying hyperlocal. And, well, we are. You are hyperlocal. You're also the conduit of what Tim was saying of vetted news. you know, that it seems this is definitely my go-to. And I just really want to thank you for all the work that you've done to keep on delivering news that is clear, concise, not inflammatory, and just kind of reporting the news as is, which is rare, because you talked about, you know, there are so many companies controlling the media right now that there's actually so few companies controlling so many media outlets that it's just an interesting time.
Yeah, and you know, in any credible story that's curated or represented on social media or on the web, someplace there has to be a reporter. Somebody has to do that legwork initially, where there's really no story or no trustworthy story there. And, you know, again, that's this problem now with news that's being just made up out of nowhere and being presented. So, you know, so I think one of the important roles we play is that, so we originate that content, and it may appear in a lot of different places, but, you know, I hope that what we can provide is that trusted, knowledgeable, experienced reporter who does the homework and can tell the story.
Absolutely. And it has definitely changed so much from storytelling. I so enjoy the K2O little vignettes that Scott and Quentin and everybody kind of puts together that is just, you know, from when I was working at the Empire, which was a decade or even more ago, you know, it was just, you know, who, what, where, when, and why, the 5 W's, and you were out, you know, and which was the state of the print industry at that point in time. Nothing to say about the Empire at all. It was just the standard. And now people really want to hear the different voices and get the audio, and it's just great storytelling.
And the people who are affected by the news, not just the people who are, you know, presenting it. And so it used to be, you know, a story would say, this reporter has learned in deep tones.
Exactly.
And now, you know, I think it's important to, so when Walmart closed, to go to talk to the people who were directly impacted by the store closing. And people, so we had a reporter who talked to people getting counseling, and we could hear people getting counseling to help them find new jobs. And, you know, it's more than a business story, and it's more than the announcement from headquarters. It's how does it affect people in our community.
And it's really shifted. It's shifted so much to hear the different voices.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We're going to have to bring Nancy DeCherney in to talk about
it's that time.
It is. So thanks for all that you do and for the great work that KTO does. And drop by the studio anytime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
thanks for the invitation, Joan.
Thanks, Joan. Thank you.
I'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. Some birds stay put all year. Some migrate with the seasons. And some are truly on the move, dispersing across new regions, increasing their range in sometimes dramatic fashion. The glossy ibis is such a bird. Standing about 2 feet tall, the glossy ibis is a marsh bird with a long, slender, down-curved bill. In a certain light, it can appear black. But when the sun hits one just right, the bird shimmers iridescent maroon with sparkles of emerald. Glossy ibises breed on all the continents except Antarctica, but they were almost unknown in the U.S., even in the 19th century. John James Audubon saw just one in his lifetime. They crept slowly into the southeast by the early 20th century, but after about 1950, they expanded rapidly. So by the 1980s, they had spread well into the northeast and even Canada. This was but a small piece of a greater expansion, though. Glossy ibises are relative newcomers to the New World, first reaching South America around 1800. Their U.S. range is now edging ever westward to overlap with another ibis, the near look-alike white-faced ibis, which is also growing its range. You can find photos of both when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
It is 11 minutes to the hour, and in the studio with Jeff and I is Nancy DeCharney has braved the black ice to come on over to talk to us about what's cooking and keeping the community warm this weekend.
Oh, boy, are we going to be busy
Do
this weekend.
Sneakers with grippers to get from here?
I think we need to have little grippery feet. And, it's beautiful out.
It is
beautiful out. So that's the good news. And it seems like it's going to be like that for a while. And we've got Eagle Crest and all that sort of stuff. So much to do. Winter at its best. So there is a solsaying tonight if you want to do that. Music and Children with Autism, a practical guide for parents and caregivers at the Mendenhall Public Library this evening at 5:30. There's an Audubon Society public meeting at 7 and tango dancing and stuff. So Friday, 10 o'clock in the morning, free Tai Chi for seniors at the Greening Park. We've got it's an evening of shopping downtown for girlfriends and gifts in the downtown area. I think you can do that any time.
I've never. Let's go, Nancy. You got to go, Jeff. You take it.
I don't think we have to wait till Friday. But I think stores are open now, you know, a little longer, so you can take your time and have a nice
time. So sweet.
Everything's beautiful. So yeah. So let's see. There's a moving meditation with Malia out at the Yoga Path. But the real exciting thing for Friday night is the Naughty and Nice Party.
Nice. What is? Well, I'll fall into that. What is the Naughty and Nice
it's
Party?
It's an adult carnival. Kids can come too, but there will be beer and there will be snacks and food and games. Bing's been making all sorts of crazy games over there. We'll have a miniature golf hole out. The Flustered Cluckers will be performing. That's Sophie Lager and her band. So there'll be live music and the brewery's providing the beer. There'll be hot dogs coming over. There'll be cookies and all sorts of games to play besides. There's a limbo booth. So there's tickets to this event, and your ticket is $10 of it goes towards your hot dogs and your beer and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be, I think, pretty crazy.
It's
very crazy.
What time is it?
It starts at 7:30, goes till 9:30 or so, and the Beard and Mustache Contest, which we were speaking of a little bit earlier, will be, you can sign up to have your beard judged, or your invisible beard, as Jeff is planning to bring.
Yes, but I want to know, who are the judges?
The judges are, Justin Parrish, Aaron Suring, who, of course, has won international fame for his beard, and Gigi Monroe. I think these people will all know a lot.
Suring, a new stage legislator, reigning beard king, and a fabulous drag queen.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It should be a lot of fun. So I hope everybody will come. It's a fundraising event for the building. So, you know, but the music and all that, Flustered Cluckers were there last year, and it's just a lot of fun. You can come dressed however you want to. Somebody asked me if it...
Do you have to buy tickets?
There are tickets, but you can get them at the door.
Okay, great.
But you could get them online, too. And it's opening night for This Wonderful Life at Perseverance Theater, which is basically, it's a wonderful life, but a one-man show. James Sullivan, is it James Sullivan?
Yeah. It is.
Yes. He is a funny man, and he's going to do the whole thing. And you do have a few nights to see this one, but, of course, it's the holidays, so you might... Make sure you put time on your calendar to go see this one. Now, Saturday is really the intense marathon day. And you can start out at 9 a.m. with a jingle jog for girls on the run at Floyd Dryden. Put on your Christmas gear and come run, jog, or walk 5K or a mile to raise funds for girls on the run. There is the Orca Adaptive Ski Snowboard Volunteer Training at 9 a.m. at the Eagle Crest Ski Area. If you want to learn how to do that, there are several Christmas fairs at 10 o'clock, one at the Mendenhall Mall, one at the Second Saturday Market, the Airport Shopping Mall. There is several different concerts, the Arts for Youth Winter Showcase, which is Taffy Dance Studio's annual winter showcase. There is and they're at 2 and at 6. There's a holiday wreath workshop at Martha's Flowers, so you can go in there and make your own holiday wreath. She does beautiful work. And at 7 p.m., Dancing into the Holidays at Aldersgate United Church with the Juno Youth Symphony, conducted by Gohua Shaw. And also at 7 o'clock, and you're not going to be able to do both of these, Joy to the World, a holiday concert at Northern Light Church with the Alaska Youth Choir. So all kinds of things. There is a dance at 7:30, the Holiday Barn Dance at St. Anne's Parish Hall. There is It's a Wonderful Life. And speaking of Gigi Monroe, she is presenting a holiday hoedown at the Rendezvous.
Really?
Yes. It says this is a country fried holiday drag show. It's featuring an amateur drag contest. Oh, dress up and compete. So come on down. And the proceeds help buy winter gear for the Standing Rock protesters. So that's an exciting. So, like I said, Saturday is just.
Right.
Pretty
and you missed the Colette's Christmas extravaganza, I think, is also this Saturday.
Oh, my gosh. See?
I know.
How did that get missed?
That's at the Gold Town Knicks.
Yeah, so there's just so many things. So then on Sunday, I think you need the restorative yoga at 10:30 in the morning.
To gear up again.
Yeah, to get going. And then there's also ukulele. We have a Christmas fair at the mall still. An Evening of Illusions at 2 p.m. at JDHS. All New Magic and Illusions with Gary Carson and Janny. And this supports the JD Dance Team going to the U.S. National Dance Competition.
Oh, yay.
And there's a holiday skate show over at the Treadwell Ice Arena. There's a silent auction, a dessert auction, and that's a fundraiser for the skating club. And at 3 p.m., there, Doug Smith will be doing a Sunday piano concert over at the Northern Light. It's free, but it's a fundraiser for the new grand piano for the new Jack. And I'll be going to that and bringing some pictures of the new Jack. Yeah, we're starting to get, like, so you can look at it and see what it's going to be like. So let's see, what else? That gets us sort of through the weekend. On Monday, it's Locals Night at Hangers on the Wharf. There's Tlingit Language Learners in the Downtown Public Library. At Makerspace, make Christmas cards. Come on down and make. They have a variety of stamps and art cards and all that sort of stuff. We've got, you know, you just should come to the, we've got the Thunder Mountain High School and the JDH High School and Mudrooms all on Tuesday. Get all the details at jahc.org. Get your tickets. You can go to the KTOO website. And the best thing to do is just enjoy your family and friends. We'll see you somewhere.
Thank you, Nancy, for coming on in, leaving us with that little holiday message.
That's great.
All right. And remember, tomorrow night, Naughty and Nice, 7:30 at the Jack.
I'll be here.
Thanks for coming in. Well, that is about wrapping up our show for the December 8th edition of Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown at the board, producer and engineer. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And yes, the weather. I know so much about it now that Rick Fritch was here. So tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 15. It is going to be windy. We've got a high wind warning issued today until December 10th at 12 p.m. Tomorrow, mostly clear, highs around 20. Areas of blowing snow, and then we're looking at gusts up to 45 miles an hour, depending on where you are, maybe even up to 60, depending where you are. Friday night, mostly clear. We're looking at, like, mostly clear and beautiful, dry weather for several days. Thanks for listening to KTOO, and have a great day.
Looking for something different to add joy to the season? Check out the Holiday Barn Dance this Saturday, September 10th, 7:30 at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. The live music is by Full Circle with Greg Berger, Mary DeSmet, Doug Smith, and Quinn Zahasky. And Susie Kendick will teach and guide you through her entertaining contra dances. You don't need experience or a partner. Discounts for 25 and under, free for AmeriCorps and JVs. Sponsored by Juno Folk Dancers with help from KRNN. Holiday Barn Dance, Saturday.